took one shot, and I went right over with the wagon on my head, and I was limping for a while. So,
my name is Jeff Bowman, and this happened in camp in the month of August. This happened in Pioneer Youth Camp. Well, one day the High Tour boys said to themselves, "Well, we better raid Cedarville because they're at a social." So we said, "Oh yeah, let's raid them." So then all the boys ran down the toboggan slide, and we ran past the lake, and we went into one of the cabins. We overturned all of the beds, every single one. We threw prowl all over the floor and the sheets. And the next day, we got to the social hall, and then a couple of the High Tour boys asked us, "Was your bunk raided last night?" "No, our bunk hasn't been touched."
My name is Debbie Wheeler. I was living in a university camp in British Columbia, and it was a housing project for the faculty and the staff. It was made of converted army barracks, and I was very young, and my mother was taking care of a newborn baby, and I had a new tricycle. And my mother suddenly realized I wasn't in front of the house where I should be, so she went looking all over the place and couldn't find me. And when she got to the outskirts of the camp, she saw my new tricycle tipped over in a deep ditch that she knew was filled with water. And she was terrified that I had drowned. So finally she got enough nerve to look over the edge and saw that I hadn't. And she organized a search party and looked some more. And pretty soon she got so tired that she went home, and she found me sitting on the in the backyard in a mud puddle chewing a dog bone. She thought I'd be very sick, but oddly enough, I wasn't.
My name's June, and this takes place in the first month of camp. One night in camp, the girls in my bunk decided to tie the bell so that it wouldn't ring in the morning, and so we could sleep a little later. So the next morning, when the director was trying to ring the bell, he realized that it wasn't working, and he sort of knew that it was the girls in our bunk who had done it. So he took one of the boys' buglers, and he came around to our bunk, and he blew in each one of our ears a bugler, and that really woke us up that morning.
My name is Joseph, and this happened in PS8 when I was in the third grade with Sam. Well, we were walking out of school one day, and this kid from fifth grade came over to me and Sam, and he started pushing us. Said, "Hey, you." So we turned around, and he pushed me and Sam. So Sam got mad, and he pushed him. So then I punched him in the lip, and he started bleeding. So then he went home. And then the next day, he came with his mother back to school with a note. So then she went to the principal and told the principal. But then the principal told her that he watched everything out the window, and she ripped up the note.
My name is Thomas Otway, and on New Year's Eve, 1965, the sound of breaking glass was heard on First Avenue and 9th Street. Presently, the sirens of fire engines were heard, and a young man was lying in the gutter with a broken back. Apparently, he had fallen from a window about two or three stories above. He was speaking, but inaudibly, and there was an absence of any blood on the sidewalk, although there was broken glass. It was about 20 minutes before police came, about a half hour before before the ambulance came, but a large crowd that had gathered was dispersed.
Well, it was February 12th, 1965, when I went up to my friend's house to sleep over. His parents were going to a party, and they had left at 7:30, and we were just sitting around in the house. when my friend Paul suggested that we should go outside. But then I said, that's a good idea, but how are we going to go outside and lock the door if we don't have the key? And he says, it's very simple, follow me. So we went out the front door, up the stairs to the roof door and unlocked it. Then we came downstairs again, locked the door, turned out all the lights in the house. Then we went into the kitchen. We unlocked the sliding bar door, pushed it back, opened the window, and climbed out onto the fire escape. Then we locked the door and the window and climbed up the ladder up onto the roof. Then we went through the roof door, down the stairs, and outside. My name's Andy Cunningham.
My name's Helen, and one day we had some guests over. What? And there's a little boy, and she was fooling around with the dog, and the dog bit him on the nose, and then my mother said to him, "We'll bite the dog back." And the boy bit the dog back on the nose.
My name is Gilbert Swire, and this happened in the uptown portion of Sheep's Meadow. Well, I was only four then, and I think I was four, I'm not too sure. I was there with my brother and my father. And all of a sudden, I start to smell some smoke. And then we walked around to try and see where it was coming from. We thought it was trash collectors, and found that there was some brush fire. It wasn't too big, so we got some sticks and started putting the topsoil over on it. We found some money after we did it, and a cigarette package. Evidently, someone had thrown a match away without making sure it was out. A little bit later, a woman and child came along and asked what had happened. We told them they thought it was trash collectors too, just burning trash. That's all.
My name is Charlie Edwards, and this happened on a cloudy day on 6th Street. I was walking, minding my own business, when these three boys came to tap me on the shoulder. And one said, "Do you want to fight?" And so I kept on walking. And the kid said, "Come on and fight." And then he practically pushed me over this fence, but I kept on walking. Then another kid punched me right in the shoulder, and I was so mad I turned around and punched the kid in the chest. And he stepped away for a second, then all three of them jumped on me. And it was so fierce, I didn't know what was happening. Then finally I took a couple of steps backwards, and I got away from them. When I got home, my face was all bleeding, and I had a lot of bruises.
My name's Noah Kinnickstein. And one day in camp, it was about the middle of it, me and Andy Cunningham, we found this place where we could turn up the water on the water fountain. So we used to always squirt kids at this time when we could do anything we wanted. So one day, this girl with a bag of peaches, she came along and she started trying to wash off these peaches. And every time she did it, we turned it on real high so it squirted her right in the face, or real low so she couldn't get any water. So eventually she said, "What's wrong with this fountain? I mean, like, it's always acting up." So me and Andy knew it was happening, but she didn't. So we just let her, wash the peaches off, but she sure did get wet. So then one other time, me and Andy were doing this, and some big kids came along from the teenage division, and we were about to squirt them, but then we thought that we'd get into a lot of trouble, so we didn't squirt them. Then, so a counselor came along and he said, "Did I see your hand in there, Andy?" And Andy said, "My hand? What, my hand? Of course not." And so from then on, me and Andy never did it again.
My name is Teresa, and this happened last year on our chicken farm in Connecticut. Every spring in Connecticut, I have the job of spring cleaning. That is, there are old abandoned chicken coops in back of our farm, and it's usually stored up with all kinds of junk from the 1920s and 30s that my great-grandparents have had in the attic. A girl named Jody offered to help me last winter. And so when it did come time for that, I asked her as she came running down the road, and I said, Jody, are you going to help me? And she said, well, I can't today, Teresa. And I said, well, why not? And she said, well, I have to go to town, and I have to go with some girlfriends to the movie place in Willimantic. And I said, well, there is no movie place in Willimantic. And she said, oh, I didn't mean in Willimantic. I meant, you know, down in Hartford. I said, in Hartford? That's about 150 miles from here. And she said, oh, we're going to stay overnight at somebody else's house. And I said, in other words, you don't feel like spring cleaning, huh? And she said, oh, yes, but, you know, I feel terribly sick, and besides that, I'm allergic to dust. And I said, then why did you offer? And she said, well, you know, I just felt like, you know, helping people. And I said, all right. And so then she ran back down the road towards her grandmother's house. And then as she was running down the road, I thought to myself, going to town, hmm? Well, if she could work, then would she? And can she?
Well, my name is Janet Griffith. One night, my mother told me to go to get ready for bed, and I decided that I wanted to play my radio. I took it down and turned it on, but I heard a lot of static. And I fooled around with it, and then my mother came in and she asked me, was I getting ready for bed? And I decided I was wasting a lot of time, and so I went in to wash up and I came back. And I fooled around with my radio and went into bed, and I took the radio with me. And I turned it on, and then I heard static, then it was dead. I went to sleep. Well, I woke up about 1 o'clock and I heard violins playing. And I thought my mother was listening to the radio because her lights were on. Then she turned off the lights, and I still heard the radio, but then I fell asleep. Well, I woke up again, and it was very light outside, and I thought my mother was waking up because the radio was on pretty loud. And then I looked at the clock, because sometimes she wakes me up about a half an hour, 15 minutes early, and, you know, every minute counts. And it was 6:15. I thought, was my mother going crazy? I went out to the living room to tell her to cut the radio. And I heard nothing. Then I went to the bathroom because we have large ear vents and sometimes we can hear what's going on in the other apartment. And then there was nothing there. Well, I remember that I was playing the radio last night and I went and I started looking for the radio. And I found it was blaring. I was very mad at myself.
Well, my name is Sam, and this takes place around my house on Montague Street, which is the main street in Brooklyn Heights. And we were on Montague Street, my brother and I, and walking towards a store. And all of a sudden, I turned around and we saw some smoke a couple blocks down. So I said, you wait here and go in the store and I'll meet you there later. So he went in and I started running down the block. And I saw it was a fire across the street from where I live. So I started running down there and it was really, the fire was really burning up now and it swept through the first floor. And lucky there was nobody home. So I rang the fire alarm and a couple of minutes later the fire truck came in and put the fire out. And a few minutes later, I saw my brother running down out of breath, and he said, what happened? I said, nothing, never mind, just forget it.
Good.
My name's Lynn. A few years ago, I went to Chinatown with my parents and a friend to have dinner. It was the Chinese New Year, but I didn't know this then. When we got to Chinatown, the streets were full of firecrackers going off and people running around, talking, having lots of fun. The main attraction was the colored tissue paper dragon, and he was dancing through the streets collecting money for the Chinese community chest. We asked some of the people about the symbolism of the dragon. They said that it was for all that was good in nature. He was playful and fierce, and he was blowing smoke and rearing up, and he was dancing and twisting through the streets. The money that he collects dancing through the streets is used to build schools in China and to buy presents for hungry, needy people in China.
My name's Jeff Bowman, and this happened around my block. On a bright June day, I, Jeff Bowman, was riding my bike when I saw my friend playing stickball on a factory wall. So I made a sharp low turn around the block toward my friends. I had to cross the street because a car was coming toward me. So I crossed over and rode on the other side of the road. I had looked back to see if any cars were coming, but none were coming. So I kept on riding toward my friends. But before I reached them, Stanley, who was at bat, said to me, "Watch out, Jeffrey." But it was too late. Before I could turn my head to see what he was talking about, a white Mercury came and hit me. Instantly, I flew off on the ground. I laid there for a minute or two, and then I got up, and angrily, I said, "Oh, heck, look what happened, for my bike was wrecked." Soon, there was a crowd around me. My friend said to me, "Are you hurt?" "No, I'm not hurt," said I. "But because of this, I may not be able to go to camp." Then my friend James came rushing out of his house saying, "What happened, Jeffrey?" "Oh, I see. Should I go tell your parents?" "They're not home," said I. "When will they be home?" "At 5:30," I said. James then looked at his watch and saw that the time was 6:15. So he and Stanley went over to my house and got my stepfather. Meanwhile, the driver, who was a man, tried to get away. And another car blocked him off, and the driver, who he blocked off, came out of the car and said, "I was just going to park my car." "I bet," said the other man. So the man who I got in the accident later I found out that he was from Jamaica, West Indies. He came over to me and said, "Are you hurt?" "No," said I. Then he said, "I'm very sorry, but this time, my stepfather was here, and he talked to me, and then he told James to call the ambulance. After my stepfather had a talk, or you could say a lecture, with the driver I got in the accident with, an ambulance came here, and behind the ambulance was a police car. I came and went to the hospital. But I ended up going to camp July 6, exactly 2 weeks after the accident.
My name is Andrew Lisfield, and it happened in the sixth grade trip to Camp Thoreau. Well, we had all gotten set up to go to bed, and Miss Freston come and say, "All right, kids, get undressed and go to bed, no talking." So we were getting undressed, and while we were getting undressed, Bill was on the far side, right next to the window. So he started putting on his kind of show, and everybody was looking. And we didn't pull a shade down. So he turned around, and he suddenly stopped, and he said, "Gee whiz, the girls might be looking." So I turned around, they were all crowded at the window. So we were in bed, pretending to be sleeping. Miss Freston comes and says, "All right, boys, no talking, go to sleep." So she goes out, and we start talking, and around 10:30, I went into the other room across the hall to see if anybody was awake, and only Charlie was awake. So we worked out a system of knocking to go into the rooms, and we tried it out. One time Charlie came over into my room, and I had a window right above my bed so I could see if anybody was coming down the hall or what anything was doing all the way up there. So I say, Miss Preston's coming. I say, Charlie, quick, Miss Preston's coming. Go into the closet. So he runs into the closet. Miss Preston comes in. She's taking off her sneakers. Yeah, and so she says, all right, boys, go on to sleep. And she trots up back up the hall. And we start talking again. We didn't do that anymore. So then around 11 o'clock, 11:30, Miss Preston comes in. This time she's taken, well, no, she has clothes on, don't worry. So she's, she comes in, and she says, she's really tired. She says, don't worry, boys, go to sleep, no talking. She goes out, and we start telling ghost stories. And I was the only one who brought a flashlight, and I would hand it over to Bill. And see, we would turn it on, we'd shine it upon the girls' room. We didn't see anything though, because the light, it spread out. And then around 3:30, no, it's the last event, Mr. Studer was always walking up and down the hall. And so we went up to the girls' room. Mr. Studer wasn't there. And somebody was saying something to somebody, so we went back into the room. Then we were talking, and Mr. Studer heard us, so he comes in, and he says, all right, Bill, come out with me. You can sit out here for an hour for talking. So he's sitting out there. And then everybody had fallen asleep, and then I fell asleep, and Bill came back in. And he said, I said to him something like, get out of here, Bill, or something like that. All right, that's it.
My name is Laura. Well, my story is about once in Easter, my parents bought me a miniature rabbit for a present. So during the bad weather, I also found an old stray tomcat. And so my mother let me keep it. While I was there, while it was the bad weather, so. Well, we had to keep them apart because, you know, who knows what a cat would do to a miniature rabbit, so. We put the cat in a box and we kept the cat in the kitchen. But one night I wanted to bring the cat in my room, so I brought it up in my room, and my mother, and, well, I found that the cat was gone during the night. So my mother said that she had come in my room and left the door open. So. We went downstairs and we couldn't find the cat, so we decided to feed the rabbit. So we looked in the rabbit's box, and the cat was in there, and he was holding the rabbit down firmly, licking his fur. So, well, from then on, we could leave the cat and the rabbit alone in the house without locking either animal up.
My name is Susanna Leet, and this happened at Fire Island when I was about 3. In Fire Island, most of the communities have main boardwalks, and different houses have their own boardwalks coming into the main boardwalk. Well, the boardwalk from my house is very slanted, and so one time when I was 3, my sister, who's 2 years older than I, decided to help my mother and put me in the stroller and take me on a ride down the boardwalks. Well, the boardwalks are pretty high up from the ground, about 8 feet, and so my sister started walking down with me in the stroller, and she suddenly lost her balance, and she was sliding down the boardwalk with me in the stroller, and we went off the boardwalk, and I was screaming with delight, and my sister was screaming with terror. And I landed in a tree, and I was sort of, I was being held up by the straps on my pants, and my sister, who had fallen to the ground, was wailing. And my mother and father came running out, and they picked me out of the tree with a fishing hook, and they went down, and they went down onto the beach under the boardwalk and got my sister out.
Oh, God, that's
cool. I'm Sean Cease, and this happened last spring when I was having trouble with my teeth. And on this particular day, Teresa and I were coming from Central Park. We entered the waiting room, a modern room with abstract paintings and weird sculptures all over the place. Here it is, I said sarcastically. Oh, brother, said Teresa. Just then, Dr. Perlman burst out, a short, husky man with a mustache. Hello, Sean, he said. Hello, Dr. Perlman. This is Teresa. Hello, Teresa, he said. As she started to reply, he suddenly said, who's your dentist? Teresa said, surprised, Dr. Sheldon. As she said this, he was examining her braces with his fingers. Where, he demanded. Brooklyn, she said. I should have known, he said. Miss Green will call you, Sean. Goodbye, Teresa.
My name is Charles Edwards, and this happened a long time ago. Well, I was about 3 years old, and it was a sunny day. So I went outside, and I saw this black stuff. So I went and I sat in it, and it turned out to be tar. And so then my mother looked out the window, and she starts screaming, and she runs out, and it took around a couple of hours for them to get me out of the tar.
Well, my name is Andy Cunningham, and this happened at the camp that I go to. It's called Camp Hurley. And one night, well, almost every night this happens. We get into bed, and the counselor goes out of the room. And then you hear this two boys whispering. And then the boy says, hey, would you hand me a shoe? And the guy says, oh, sure, here. And so then for about 5 seconds, you don't hear anything. And then you hear this boy scream, and then you hear a thud on the floor, and a guy says, Gilbert, did you throw a shoe at me? And Gilbert says, no, I was asleep, you just woke me up. And so then everything is quiet for a while. Then you hear these two boys whispering. And the one boy says, hey, would you pass me a shoe?
Well, my name's Noah Kinnickstein. This happened in camp the second day I was there. Well, we had this counselor. And, well, he wasn't our counselor. He was just the person who goes around to see if all the kids are asleep. So this is the second night I was there. So he comes into our bunk. And see, these kids, they weren't asleep. So, I wasn't either. The whole bunk wasn't asleep because they were so excited, you know, about the first day and everything. So one kid starts laughing. So he says, did I hear somebody laughing in here? So one of the kids says, who, me? So he says, Whoever I heard, go out on the porch. See, because we had this porch right outside. So he went out, and another kid starts laughing. And then after that, he goes out, and he talks to him. So then everybody goes back in bed, and one kid starts laughing again. So he has to stay out for about 1 hour, just on the porch in the middle of the night. And so then he says, okay, is everybody gonna be quiet? And everybody says, okay.
My name is Teresa, and this happened at our Camp Greenkill. This was about the fifth night we had been there, and so far we had had two drills, and this was out of swimming. They thought that two girls had drowned because they didn't have their buddy tags put up on the board. They had brought them into the water, and they had fallen off. So there was an alarm put through the camp where they ring this big bell, and they couldn't find these two girls, and these two girls were up in the shower. And they were washing their hair and washing their clothes. So everybody was in front of this big house that was on this hill full of rocks in our wet bathing suits and on the filthy ground. And they're yelling to all the counselors to get together and get on their bathing suits fast. So the counselors got on their bathing suits. So then you see every single counselor running down from every cabin in the girls' unit and the boys' unit straight down to the water, and everybody dives in. So then this, I think she was the girls' division leader. Her name was Fran. She was kind of fat, and she couldn't go in the water because she wouldn't, she'd sink down. And so she was up there directing all the counselors. Every counselor had to go down into the water, into the shallow part and into the deep part, and this lake was about 2 miles wide. So the boating instructor took a couple of counselors out in a rowboat. It just so happened that this rowboat wasn't the best rowboat in the whole world and had a hole in it, which nobody knew about. So all these counselors go out in the rowboat, and suddenly this cork or something that was holding it up comes out. And everybody was watching from the hill, and you see this big splash of water come between in the middle of the boat, and suddenly the boat cracks in the middle, and all the counselors fall in. So the boat sinks, and they had a hard time getting the other counselors out, because these counselors had been in some part, well, the lake gets very shallow suddenly and goes into woods, and so they were caught in seaweed in a lake. And so they had to get these counselors out, and they were still looking for these two girls, who by now had had their bathrobes on and were hanging up their clothes on the line that was up at the shower. And they and these girls didn't know a thing that was going on. You know, like they said, boy, the girls' camp was awfully deserted today. She said, everybody's swimming. She said, okay. So then these other counselors were still diving up and down trying to find the kids. And suddenly one comes up and said, I found something. And this counselor found about 1,000 buddy tacks at the bottom of the lake. So they were all counting them out, and they had dates at the other side of the buddy tags, and they finally found one that said 1965. And then it said the name on it, Leela Green, I think it was, and Shirley McKendrick, I think it was. And so they're searching all the camp, and suddenly they tell all the girls to come down to the lake. So nobody heard her. Like, we had all started going back to the girls' unit because they had told us to go back. They said they were still looking and that we should get our clothes on and get ready for dinner. So I was over at kitchen duty with a few other girls, and kitchen duty is when you have to go over and set the table and do all sorts of things. And so we were going back to our rooms. We got dressed very fast, and me and this other girl went over to the to kitchen duty. And so while we were over there, the cook was very frantic because he needed two of the JCs, and the JCs were down at the lake. So he had asked about three or four of the boys to help him cook the dinner. And so while this was going on, the boys were clattering dishes all around. If they hadn't been plastic, there would have been no dishes in camp. And they were spilling food all over the floor. And meanwhile, they were trying to call the girls' unit together, but you couldn't hear a thing in the kitchen because there was clattering dishes. And these counselors were down at the bottom of the lake looking for buddy tags, and they still had a hard time getting out the other counselors. And so finally, some little kid who's about 5 years old says that the two girls whose buddy tags they found were up taking a shower. And so that's how the day ended, by the other kids getting a spanking.
Well, my name is Sam, and this takes place when Charlie, Joseph, and I went to the country a couple of weeks ago. And we were on the train, and it was almost the last stop. So we decided to go outside on the end. And the door was stuck, and it wouldn't close. So we were outside, and this man with three beer cans in his hand yells, "Close the door." So we try to close the door. It doesn't close. And this guy's so drunk, he doesn't understand anything anymore. So we tell him, we try to tell him that it's not, that it can't close. He says, so we start to get up. And then all of a sudden we get out and we close the door. And finally we get there, and Charlie buys these sodas and we leave them outside on the grass. And about 1 o'clock later at night, we decide to go get them and drink them. So we went out and got them. And we went out and got them, and we sat down and we started to watch a movie. And all of a sudden we felt something spill, and I found out that I spilled my soda on the seat. And it was all dripping out and it was all wet, and I sat down and I felt something wet. So I said, Charlie, you want to trade seats with me? And he said, oh, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care. Let's trade. So we traded, and he found that it was wet. Then he said, hey, Joe, you want to trade seats with me? He said, it doesn't matter. So we traded seats, and Joseph got wet. And then a friend of Joseph's, I think, was his name was Mike, and we started calling him names, and we started teasing him and kicking him and running, and then we had him on the ground. We were beating him up, and then we ran into the house and ran upstairs, and we started calling him names and slammed the door, and he came up and got real mad and started throwing things at us. And so later, while we were watching television, the temperature of the house was down to 30 degrees, so they'd make us go to bed. But it didn't matter, so Joseph turned it up to 70 degrees. And Charlie and I thought that he was gonna bust, and so we kept telling him to put it down, put it back down. But he wouldn't put it back down, so we left it up there. And we kept making trips back around, back up the stairs and around. And finally, when the movie ended, we decided not to watch the second one. We went upstairs, and Joseph started to follow us. And we locked him out, and we finally went to bed.
Well, my name is Jonathan, and this happened last summer. It was the last day of camp. We went to a day camp called Camp Pine Lake, and it was located between Croton and Peekskill in Westchester, which is called the town of Cortland. So it was this day, we were waiting at a place called Brook Lane for the camp bus to come and pick us up. So I was there with my sister Wendy and my next door neighbor's child named David Church. He was a couple of years younger than I was. So we were waiting and waiting for nearly an hour, and a bus didn't come. So David suggested, let's walk there. It was about a mile long, so we start walking down the road, and all of a sudden, out of the woods come this big gray dog, and it was so big, it was higher than my waist. My sister got real scared, but she told David and I to scare him away, so we scared him into the woods. And we started walking, but then pretty soon the dog started following us again. And then it came out into the middle of the road, and this car was coming. And he was nearly going to hit him, but he slams on his brakes, and it just missed him. And the dog got scared and ran into the woods. So then we started walking again, and then he kept on following us. My sister was scared. She nearly dropped the lunch. And then we keep on walking, and we keep on walking. So there's this man at the mailbox, you know? There's this man walking to the mailbox. So the dog starts coming after her, and then she runs away. So then she keeps on following us again till we get to the camp, and all the kids started running. And then the manager of the camp chased them out of there.
Well, my name is Janet Griffith. This happened on the fifth grade trip, and the farmer allowed us to ride the horse. And I decided I was going to ride the pony. And I got on top of it, and there was this dog there, and he started teasing the pony, and the pony didn't like it, and he decided that he was going to run after the dog, and I was on top of the pony, and the dog started running very fast, and the pony started running after the dog very fast, and we went galloping along across the stream. It was very bumpy because I was going up and down, and I'd never ridden before, and I got very scared, and I started yelling, and people were following. The kids were following me in the class, and finally he decided to stop, and I tried to get off the horse, but my foot was stuck in the stirrups, and I couldn't get down, and finally the farmer's daughter came, and she helped me down, and Mrs. Studer came, and the rest of the kids, and that's all. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it was in the morning, and so
I woke up and it happened to be Friday the 13th. So we went to breakfast. This was in camp. And so the first thing that happened that was bad was that one of my campmates spilled his cocoa. That wasn't so bad. So then about the middle of the day, our counselor told us just to march out of our bunks, no matter what you had on, just march out. So we just keep marching. We ask, what's this doing? So he says, just keep marching out of camp. And everybody, the whole camp was there. Everybody was just marching out of camp. So we get our counselor, we ask him, what's happening? He says, just keep marching. So we're about halfway out of camp now, and we ask him what happened, and he says, well, there's a fire in this younger bunk. So, and you know, it could have caught on, it can catch onto the whole camp. So we would just keep marching and marching, and we marched for about, it seemed a lot. I don't know how long it was, though. So then we find, so all these fire trucks come and ambulances, and nobody gets really hurt, but the whole bunk gets, all their clothes gets burnt, and I know this counselor, because it was in the second trip, and he had been my counselor in the second trip, and so he had lost his driver license, his, all his money that was in his wallet, because they were going swimming, and it was a so we all marched back to camp, and then we find out that it was all burnt down.
My name is Charlie Edwards, and this happened at Shelter Island. Well, we were going on this hike, and we were real far from home, and we were going to go on the other side of the woods, but Sam said, "Nah, I'm too tired anyway. I want to watch the basketball game." So he went, and it was so cold, so me and Joe went way up in the woods. And Joe said, "Well, we better start turning back, you know, because we have to get home soon." So we turned back, and Joe says, "See that nest way up in the tree, Charlie? Could you climb up and get it for me?" And I said, "Are you crazy? There's no limbs on it." So he says, "Well, you can shimmy up for it." So I said, "Well, okay, since I'm a good friend." So I said, "Joseph, I can't do it." So he says, "Come on, Charlie, I know you can do it." So I get all the way to the top of the tree, and you know, it's just a slant, the skinny branch, and he says, "Come on, it won't fall, don't worry, Charlie." So I grab it, and I have my hand on the nest, and some of it falls down. So Joe says, "Oh, it's no good. Come on down, Charlie." So I said, "What do you mean, come on down? I practically broke my neck to get up here." So I take the nest down, and we walked home.